Was it okay, May asks Armand, you taking the afternoon off? She doesn't really care if it was okay or not. She just needed to hear her own voice, proving her own existence in this exact moment, walking with Armand along the street in the dark purplish-blue night, the tables outside, the restaurants and cafes taken away, the pavements almost empty, all the flowers folded up. The last bar they were in closed without them noticing. She was enjoying talking to Armand, conversation that didn't stumble or hiccup or just keel over and die the way it tended to with May and men her own age. Now they are walking, apparently aimlessly. May's having fun, but she's also worried that at any moment Armand is going to say, "It's time I went to bed," and not add anything cliched but also exciting, like, "Want to join me?" Marguerite understood. "Did your friends mind you taking the day off?" he asks. "They're probably stoned by now," she says. "And also, they're quite self-absorbed. They won't miss me."
"Then you don't need to go back yet?" he says. "There's another bar round the corner. It's open until 4.
"Why not?" May says. They go into the bar, which is lit up with hanging strings of light. May, having been prevented from paying all night, insists on buying the drinks. Her card is promptly declined. Then, intensely embarrassed, she has to ask Armand to pay while she texts her mum to ask if she can transfer over an advance on her allowance. She tries not to let him work out what she's doing, but he guesses anyway.
"You haven't mentioned your parents," he says. "But I see they're good to you."
May says, at the thought of them. Then she thinks she must sound ungrateful.
"I love my parents," she adds. "And they're generous, of course, but they're also kind of, I don't know, they're pretty big personalities, in different ways. I sometimes wonder if there's enough personality space left for me. I can't say that, though, or my mum will probably tell me that there's, like, no such thing as personality or whatever."
"An interesting theory," Armand says.
"Oh, if you're pro-Hume and anti-Locke, I'm sure you'd find her very interesting," May says.
She's drunk. She can feel it. The alcohol wants her to embark on a long monologue about her parents. "Nope," she tells herself. "She will not be doing that." Armand already thinks she's much younger than him, even though he's not even 30 yet, and she's almost 20. And whining about her parents will make her look even more like a sulky kid.
"I don't disagree with her," Armand says. "But I think she left out the good bits, like Sartre. I mean, if there's no such thing as an essential self, then it's all a matter of choice. Nothing and everything, you know?"
He leans back in his chair. May can see the shoulder muscles shift and resettle under his t-shirt. She looks at them, then thinks, 2-year-old, ice cream, and quickly looks away.
"That's true," she says. "I like Sartre. I just wish I could feel that way, instead of agreeing with him rationally. My mum, I don't want to talk about parents," May says.
She taps the table.
"This is officially parent-free space. A safe space. That's a millennial joke, by the way."
The joke obviously wasn't very good, because Armand looks serious. Then he says,
"I am a parent. I have a 2-year-old daughter, Emily. I'm not living with Emily's mother, Melanie, at the moment, but we're still married. We're going through some things."
May is too taken aback to think. She says quietly,
"What things?" "Well, when we had Emily, it was not intentional. We were talking about breaking up, actually. But Melanie wanted to have the baby, and we loved each other, despite our differences. A lot of differences. But we decided to try to resolve them and become a family. That hasn't worked very well. So we're separated at the moment. We're meant to be thinking about what we want.
May didn't realize exactly how much she liked Armand until he says this, the word married, at which point her stomach contracts, like a snail trying to pull itself back into its shell. She wraps her arms around her abdomen.
We agreed we would still meet other people, Armand says. But I know also that other people might not like being other people, which is why I thought, without making any assumptions, I'd mention it now.
He likes me, is one of May's thoughts. He's a married father, is the other. The two thoughts make her feel both euphoric and crushingly disappointed, almost at the same time. Then both feelings merge, and she feels only blankness. She wonders what difference the news really makes. What is this, if not a holiday romance? And what does it matter if the subject of her holiday romance has a wife and child she'll never meet? Still, the blankness persists. It's late, she says. I think I should probably go.
Oh, of course, Armand says. He sounds sad and polite. I completely understand. I'll call you a taxi.
Thank you, she says.
He nods, almost a bow. May feels suddenly like crying. You will not cry in front of him, she tells herself. You will not.
And it actually works. It's not until she's alone in the taxi that she does cry. Traveling down the tear-smeared street, past the people talking and laughing outside nightclubs and sex clubs, enjoying their adult fun. Because she's a child, so painfully and obviously so. Because only a child would feel so hopeful over nothing, then cry when it doesn't get what it wants. The next day. The coffee house. May is waiting outside, a little way down the street, leaning against some railings. Marguerite is putting out the tables and chairs. The early morning sunlight slants the shadows of the flowers across the tabletops. May wonders if maybe Armand isn't coming in today. She chips at the railings nervously with her fingernails, realizes she's touching someone's old chewing gum, retracts her hand sharply. Then Armand walks up to the cafe.
Marguerite, guten Morgen, he says.
Then he looks over and sees May. She takes her sunglasses off and waves at him. He laughs.
Un minute, Armand says to Marguerite.
The two of them, May and Armand, are on the balcony of Armand's apartment. From here they can see rooftops, domes and spires, trees, parks, other people on other balconies. On the opposite side of the river, some people on a moored-up canal boat are making breakfast, the smoke from their stove rising up against a row of tall houses, red, brown, and orange. Shoulder to shoulder, thinks May. She herself is standing shoulder to shoulder with Armand. A skin contact that would have seemed like the most sexually exciting thing to have ever happened to May so far in her life had she not had sex with Armand just half an hour ago. Even so, the touch energizes her. She imagines that she can feel each small hair of his arm scraping lightly against her own skin. She looks at her own arm next to his, as small and pale as a peeled twig. She smiles. She says, I was just thinking about when I was a kid and I used to sit in the garden doing things like peeling all the bark off twigs or opening up conkers and separating them into piles. I used to do it for hours. My dad had a joke that it was the Chinese in me, you know, like I was biologically predisposed for factory work. My mum didn't like that joke.
I can imagine not.
Yeah, well, she just watched me and made notes in case I was autistic or something.
Armand laughed.
His own parents, one French, one Mauritian, live in the suburbs of Paris. They're nice people. They call him every Sunday and tell him all the news from the neighborhood. They don't ask how he is. They assume he's doing brilliantly.
Do you know anything about your birth parents?
He asks. No. Mum says they were untraceable. I don't know anything about them.
I can't imagine giving a child up, Armand says. Their lives must have been pretty desperate.
Or they're both dead, May says. But she realizes how unlikely that is as she says it, that all her family in China are dead. She hasn't ever liked to think much about the existence of her real parents. Thinking about it now isn't a good feeling. I actually don't want to talk about my parents, May says. Birth or adoptive. I'm in a different country and I'm still talking about them. Though maybe if I could stay here for longer, I'd run out of things to say and that would be it. I'd finally be my own person.
I know what you mean,
Armand says.
That's partly why I came here from France, though Melanie wants to go back now.
May hasn't got used to him saying Melanie yet. If she had the choice, it would be on her list of banned words, along with married. She doesn't know what to say, and there's a short silence. Armand turns to look at her.
Is it okay, me talking about her?
He says. He rubs his hair, grimacing.
I'm sorry. I've made you uncomfortable. I shouldn't have mentioned it. I don't really know what I'm doing. This is the first time anything like this has happened since, well.
What? May says, delighted and relieved. I had no idea.
God,
he says. He puts his face in his hands.
I must seem so old and complicated. This is probably one of many casual things for you, and I'm overthinking it and ruining it.
May starts to laugh. One of many adventures, she says. In fact, May has only slept with one person before Armand, and she's not even sure it counted. It was literally 3 weeks ago. She went on a date with a guy from her course. They had too much sangria at the tapas restaurant. Then they slept together. He came when he was halfway inside her. She meant to Google, am I half a virgin, and then forgot. And anyway, it's a moot point now. It didn't feel like it could even share a category with what she and Armand have just done.
That came out wrong, Armand says. I didn't mean, I wasn't bringing up numbers or anything. I celebrate whatever you choose to do in bed with whomever you choose to do it, whenever you choose to do it.
May smiles to herself. She can smell his fading aftershave, skin in sun scent. She breathes it in, picturing it making its way into her lungs, her blood, the center of her body, setting off an answering hum, a tiny shout from each cell, then down where it collects, focuses, sharpens. She likes the way he says, in bed. Well, the first thing is sex, she says, giving it emphasis. Sex, loitering exquisitely on her tongue.
And the second thing is you. And the third is now, if you're up to it. Up to it? Given your advanced age, I mean. I wouldn't want to kill you. They're both laughing now. He catches at her hips, but she dodges, running back inside. He comes after her. Then he pauses, goes back, and draws the blinds. She lies on the bed, watching the lines of sunlight narrow, burning at the edges of each long slat. Later, she thinks, they'll get up and go out into that sun for some lunch. After that, she doesn't know. May goes back to Armand's apartment the next day.
What did you tell your friends? He asks, as they're lying in bed.
Where do they think you are?
Right now, they think I'm at Anne Frank's house, May says.
And yesterday?
The Rijksmuseum, she laughs.
What if they'd wanted to go with you? He asks.
I know them, she says. They told me they'd meet me at a bar when I was done.
You seem different from them, Armand says.
But you all went on holiday together.
I know, May says.
We don't really have a deep connection, but I never expected connection. I thought I'd never really connect with anybody because there was something kind of wrong with me. And so the best thing I could do was try to fit in with the normal people that showed an interest in me. But now I wonder if I can connect with people, and I just chose the wrong friends.
That sounds more likely, Armand says.
He kisses her neck.
There's nothing wrong with you.
I don't know about that, May says. She looks out at the houses beyond his window, lit up by the sunshine. I feel like my life this far has just been waiting for a big moment, you know? A bold move. Except it's got to the point where anything would feel like too much pressure. My bold move. It's hard to do.
Well, bold moves aren't such a big deal. Almost as soon as you've made one, it doesn't feel bold anymore.
Then what?
Then you look around for the next bold move.
That sounds depressing, May says.
Does it? Says Armand.
He laughs.
I think it's rather beautiful. Maybe I didn't explain it very well.
May says, you know, I think this is what my bold move should be. Living in another country. I could just pack all my things and go somewhere totally new. If only there wasn't such a thing as real life.
Fuck real life, Armand says. You're on holiday, remember? Real life is a dirty word.
May smiles, but the words are here now, in her head. Real life. A world May has to rejoin in 1 day, 7 hours and 26 minutes, when her flight leaves.
It was totally freaking gross, Katya says to May on the plane. She has to lean across Sophia to continue, in a lower voice. I almost got hit by semen. I think the guy did it on purpose. Sophia didn't see any of it because she was covering her eyes.
It was too real, Sophia said.
And then they said no mobile phones allowed, Katya says to May. So we were like, fuck this.
So you were probably the smart one getting an early night and going to the art gallery or wherever, Sophia says to May.
Though you could have let us know, Katya says. You did kind of ditch us, May.
Sorry, says May. The other two fall asleep in their headphones and May puts on a film on her iPad, which plays through without her noticing. She said goodbye to Armand yesterday. What else was she going to do? They'd talked about it and they couldn't think of anything. May is a student in the UK. Armand is a married father in Amsterdam. That's it. It's over. Credits roll on the screen in front of her. The plane is coming in to land. Katya and Sophia are stirring. May wipes her eyes, trying not to let them see. Though if they did notice, it wouldn't matter. People cry at the endings of films all the time. Then the film ends, and they go back to their real lives. May goes back to her real life. Unfortunately, everything in her life is exactly the same as how she left it. The arrangement of philosophy books on her shelf in halls, her favourite carol in the library with the view of the chestnut tree, happy hour shots at the student bar, the picture of May and her mum and her dad in Paris, the gold bracelet she got for her 18th birthday with a specially made diamond-covered plum hanging from it, the revolving nightlight of cut-out birds. All of that seems different. Like it's only surfaces, with nothing underneath. Nothing that could give her any pleasure. A week or so after she gets home, she skips a visit to her mum because she can't be bothered to get out of bed. This isn't a good idea. May's mum immediately calls her and asks if May's okay. I'm fine, May says defensively. Her mum observes that May sounds defensive. I'm not defensive, May says. In fact, there's nothing wrong with me at all. It doesn't sound convincing. What? Well, of course there isn't, Plum, her mum says. She sounds much more sincere than May does. Tears come to May's eyes. What am I doing, she thinks. Starting a fight. This is unlike her. But then she wonders what is and isn't like her. Who decided that anyway? Why did my parents give me up? May asks. It comes out loud, sudden. Do you know? There's a pause, so long, that May checks the mobile screen. The call is still connected. She puts the phone back to her ear. What? May's mum says. Your parents? She's so startled that she's almost inaudible. May feels startled by herself. You must know something about them, she says. Plum, we're your parents, May's mum says. Where is this coming from? Do you really want to know about them? When we've discussed genes, May feels angry at that. You've kept it from me, she says. You do know something, I can tell. You can tell when I'm lying, but I can tell when you're lying too. Why do you want to know about them? What would you do? Look for them? Maybe, May says. She has no idea. I could do that. I don't think that's a good idea. Her mum speaks very gently, but there's something pushing at her voice from beneath, something less calm. That's my decision, May says. I decide if it's a good idea. Are we not enough for you? Her mum asks. Now she sounds upset. I don't understand, May. Are you angry at us? At me? About something? No. But you sound angry. What happened on this holiday? You've been avoiding my call since you got back. Did something bad happen? You can tell... No, May interrupts. Good things happened. I met someone, actually, and he asked me about my birth parents. And he said, Sartre says... Sartre, her mum says. Asked you about your...
Who is this person?
May is about to say... Armand, and he's not this person, he's the best person I've ever met. But something in the way her mum's tone slows,
becoming more considered, keeps her quiet. She can almost feel her mum's eyes doing their imperceptible narrowing. She has the sense of threat to Armand, or maybe just the idea of him, the part of herself that's been changed by that idea. "Just a holiday romance," she says.
"Plum," her mum says gently. No, deliberately gently. May can hear the strain.
"I don't understand. Why do you want to look for people you don't know when you know you won't find anything good?"
"But I don't know," May cries. "Why don't you tell me what I'd find? Why are you treating me like a child? You keep things from me. You watch me all the time. Because you don't trust me to cope with stuff on my own. You've made me feel my whole life that there's something wrong with me. I'm not strong enough or whatever. And now I think that actually I am okay. I don't need you to look after me. But you don't believe that."
"That's incredibly unfair," her mum says. She's not gentle now. She sounds clipped, angry. "You don't want to be treated like a child. Attacking me like this is childish. You, stop talking about me. You can't take any criticism, so you're analysing me. I should analyse you. Why don't you want me to meet my other mother? Because she's poor? Maybe she's not as clever as you. You sneer at stupid people. Yes, you do. I've always been worried that I'm not clever enough for you. Maybe life would be nicer with my stupid, poor mum. She wouldn't be so judgmental and hard to please and controlling."
"Yes," her mum snaps. "Drug addicts with mental health issues do tend to be less controlling. That's why she left you in a railway station."
There's a silence.
"What?"
says May. Her mum draws her breath in. May hears it. Louise is trying to calm herself, and then she's going to calm May. Tell May that she's sorry. She hears her. She'll say things like communication, understanding, acceptance, until everything's back to normal.
"Plum," her mum says. "I'm sorry. I shouldn't have."
"So that's my real mother," May says. "What about my real dad?"
"I don't know. Your birth mother didn't know," her mum says.
"May, I'm sorry."
And May, for the first time ever, hangs up on her mother. A month later. May's missed most of her lectures. She's fucked up one essay and not handed in a few others. She was meant to be meeting her personal tutor about that, and she couldn't bring herself to go. She's not talking to her mum. There's an exam next week she hasn't prepared for, and she's supposed to be handing in her dissertation a couple of weeks after that. She feels numb. The buoyancy she felt with Armand, talking about bold moves and connections and choice, feels like a long time ago. Those conversations feel like a joke, a tired, lame old joke. Every now and again, something will penetrate her numbness, like treading on a pin. Revelations, but not the kind she'd hoped for. "I'm pathetic," she realizes. "I'm weak. My mother pities me. I can't help but fail. My friends are repelled by me. I'm genetically doomed." She looks in a mirror after a night of bad sleep and despises her own flaccid face, her skin as pale and shiny as raw fish, her uncertain mouth, her unwashed hair. Is this what she looked like? She wonders. How much of me is her? May's personal tutor warns May she's at risk of being thrown off her course. At that point, the numbness goes away, and when the cloud clears, every nerve in May's body is exposed,
alive and singing with simple panic. She gets some modafinil from Sophia to catch up, the way everyone does, telling herself that by doing this, she will also demonstrate that she's not like her real mother. She's not weak or unstable or predisposed to addiction. But it turns out she's wrong about all of it, and she can't stop taking the modafinil the way everyone else stops, or stop taking the Xanax either. And before long, she's failed. Failed everything. Just like her, she thinks. Just like her. Just like her. Just like her. She sits on the floor of her room, out of pills, her face against the wall. The thoughts circle, draw in, pull tight. She leaves university and travels back to her mum's house, her mum driving, May silent, everything in boxes in the back seat, the books and the bracelet and the nightlight. And when they pull up, her mum just looks at her sadly, and May, who didn't want to cry, cries after all. "My darling Plum," May's mum says, holding her hand tightly. They don't say anything more that day. It's the next morning, over fresh pancakes with caramel sauce, made by May's mum, which, in retrospect, should have been a warning sign, that May tells her mum about Amsterdam. Afterwards, May's mum presents her plan, which is to wipe the entire memory of the holiday. May's horrified at first. She'd actually considered a wipe herself, crying at night and then punching her soggy pillow in frustration at her own stupid crying, her inability to cope. But she doesn't think the holiday itself is the problem. It was just the start of it. The first domino in the series. A domino that was always going to fall one day because May is really the daughter of someone profoundly, intrinsically damaged, and she's damaged in the same way. "Failing was my fault," she says. "My birth mother." "I hear what you're saying," says May's mum quickly. "And I understand why you're taking that line of thought. Your behaviour was self-destructive. Yes, you spiraled, but there was a triggering event, something you shouldn't have been exposed to. You're so young, you're vulnerable, and this older man saw it and exploited that." "Armand, but I wanted that to happen," May says. "I know," her mum says. "Young people in your position often feel complicit. You feel like you invited this attention.
You had a perfectly normal attraction to an older man, and it should have remained just that. But he took advantage of the situation. He destabilized your perception of yourself by questioning your origins. He impressed you with his superior knowledge, Sartre and so on. These are the first things predatory men do. He manipulated you, and you convinced yourself that this was what you wanted."
"But it is what I wanted," says May. "I was happy."
"Are you happy now?" says her mum. May pushes her plate away. She stares out of the window at the garden. "Do you feel good?" her mum asks. May shakes her head. "That's your own intuition telling you this wasn't right," says her mum. "And this is why I think a deletion is a good idea under the circumstances. This isn't just one of those things you go through as a teenager. This isn't acne or your prom date standing you up. This was an imbalance of power. An abuse." The word abuse startles May.
"You never met Armand," she says. "He isn't like that."
"So you say," her mum says. "What is he like? A married man, I know that. Did he tell you he didn't love his wife anymore?
May shakes her head. The garden wobbles in her vision.
Well, I suppose he was honest, her mum says. That's one thing in his favour.
So, if you were to go back to Amsterdam, get into university there, and then call him...
May's secret hope, said out loud. It sounds pathetic.
What do you think he would do? Continues her mother. Would he leave his wife? Invite you to move in with him? The two of you would raise his child together?
May's rigid gaze buckles, slips off the blurred shapes of the garden down into her lap. Tears follow behind it, specking her jeans.
Plum, her mum says. My beautiful plum.
She comes to May's side of the table and puts her arms around her. May smells her mother's perfume, that rich amber smell. Her mum's worn the same perfume for as long as she can remember. May could be 15, 10, a 7-year-old again, watching her nightlight revolve beside the bed. Her mum moves away. She gets a tissue out of her bag. May sees there are tears in her eyes too.
I'm sorry, May says. I've upset you. The things I said.
Don't think of it. Don't apologize, her mum says.
It's hard to see you unhappy, that's all.
Unhappy, May thinks. It's not a word she's applied to her situation. She's only used words like stupid, fucked up, pathetic, useless. Unhappy, somehow, opens a door. May puts her head in her hands and sobs. She doesn't try to stop herself or even cry quietly. Her mum moves close to her and strokes her hair. Through her crying, May can hear her mum talking gently about how May can draw a line under this last year of university. Money's not a problem. She can take some time off, reapply to other, better universities. They'd be glad to have her. And that traumatic situation in Amsterdam could be made to go away completely.
Think about it, says her mum.
Do things connected to the holiday also get deleted? May asks. Her mum hesitates. She looks slightly wary.
Yes, she says.
So when we, argued and I talked about Armand, that conversation would be erased, says her mum. All the conversations about him would be erased. Which is why it's important to do this soon, so you don't lose any more than necessary. May thinks about her birth mother. She'll forget who she was. She wonders if her mum is thinking the same thing. Was thinking the same thing. Her mum has always known what May thinks before May thinks it.
What are you feeling? Her mum asks gently.
May, wet and muffled, says something like, shouldn't she be learning from the past? But her heart's not in it, which means her mum can tell her heart's not in it. Her mum strokes May's hair.
This was exceptional circumstances, she says. You weren't at fault. You were a victim. You've had experiences you weren't ready for, knowledge that you weren't ready for. I believe in learning lessons, but this is too much, too soon. You don't need traumatic memories pulling you back. They aren't helpful. They aren't instructive. You can let them go. Start again, gradually. We work on the depression. Give you a chance to build up your confidence and self-esteem. And then you get back out there. A fresh start, How does that sound?